Hello and welcome back to Ancient Wisdom, Modern Science with me, Michelle Hammond. I am absolutely delighted to have you here with me today. Thank you for listening. And whatever you're doing, whether you're driving home, taking the dog for a walk, prepping dinner, or perhaps simply just taking a moment for yourself, I hope this next hour offers you a little space to pause, reflect, and reconnect. Because today's programme is one I've wanted to create for a little bit of time now. It's a conversation that's been quietly growing in me over many months, maybe even many, many years. It's inspired by thousands of conversations with clients, healthcare professionals, teachers, parents, therapists, business leaders, and complete strangers I've met along the way. And having just returned back from a few weeks in the States, I've had a little time to really reflect and deeply think. And actually, my thinking has been inspired by the work I'm doing to create the very first Wallingford Wellbeing Festival as part of this year's Bunkfest, a brilliant family-friendly music festival here in Wallingford, South Oxfordshire, that has recently won, or just last year, won the King's Award for Volunteer Service and is an incredible opportunity of bringing community and connection together through music. But perhaps most of all, it's inspired by a simple question. What does it actually mean to be well? And that's kind of been my life question. What does it mean to be well? It's a word we hear everywhere, isn't it? Wellness, well-being, self-care, mental health, mindfulness, resilience, balance. And of course, in the last year, longevity, health span. The well-being industry itself is now worth trillions globally. And every week, there seems to be another book promising the secret to happiness, another podcast explaining the morning routine we should all be following, you know, the 5 a.m. club, another wearable device measuring our sleep, our stress, our recovery, our heart rate variability, or even giving us a biological age. We're surrounded by advice, aren't we? And we're drowning in information. Yet despite all of this, many of us have never felt more overwhelmed, more exhausted and more disconnected, and more uncertain about what well-being actually looks like. And I wonder whether that's because somewhere along the way, we've confused well-being with optimization. We've started believing we need to become a better version of ourselves before we're somehow allowed to feel enough. And I'm delighted to see this is not just my thinking. I'm reading a lot of articles in this space, recognizing that actually maybe the rhythm is wrong. Because the belief that we need another supplement, another app, another qualification, another productivity system, another expensive retreat or another morning routine before we can finally say, I think I'm doing okay, is misleading. It's kind of proved itself to be wrong. You know, many years ago, one of my very first business coaches, the brilliant Peter Thompson, shared a phrase that has stayed with me ever since. You may have heard me talk about it before, but he would smile and simply say, forward to basics. Not back to basics, forward. And I remember my 20-something-year-old self not really understanding what he meant. Surely progress meant adding more and learning more and building more, buying more, doing more. But over time, I've realised something incredibly profound. And that's progress doesn't always come from adding. In fact, sometimes it comes from remembering what matters, remembering what has always mattered, and simplifying. Forward to basics. I think about those words almost every day now. And for anyone that has spent more than a week or two in my company, you would have heard me use those terms many times. Especially in a world that seems determined to convince us that the answer always lies somewhere outside of ourselves. It's kind of a paradox of modern life, isn't it? Think about it for a moment. Never in human history have we had more access to knowledge. The collective wisdom of humanity now sits in the palm of our hands. Like, just when you think about that, still blows my mind. We can speak to somebody on the other side of the world in seconds. We can order almost anything and have it arrive tomorrow. In fact, depending where you live, maybe even today. Medical science is advancing at extraordinary speed. Artificial intelligence can now diagnose certain diseases, translate languages instantly, summarize complex research papers, write code, compose music and personalize education in ways we could barely imagine only a few years ago. And yet, according to the World Health Organization, and definitely with what I see in clinic, anxiety and depression continue to affect hundreds and millions of people worldwide. Loneliness has become such a significant public health concern that countries including the UK and Japan appointed ministers specifically to address it. In fact, you may have listened to a show I've done previously on the very subject. Young people are more digitally connected than any generation before them, yet many, many report feeling increasingly isolated and disconnected. It's funny, isn't it? Because you think, how can we be both things? How can we be more connected, yet feel more disconnected? For me, it's kind of like the yin and yang of progress. One of the reasons I called this program Ancient Wisdom, Modern Science is because I genuinely believe the future doesn't lie in choosing one over the other. We don't have to be in Camp A or Camp B. It lies in bringing them together. Thousands of years ago, Taoist philosophy gave us the symbol of yin and yang, not as opposites, as partners, light and dark, rest and action, stillness and movement, expansion and contraction. Neither was necessarily focused on right or wrong. It's just that the one gives the other meaning. And I've been thinking recently that perhaps artificial intelligence has its own yin and yang, its own light, its own shadow. Because AI has extraordinary potential. It may help us detect cancers earlier, which would be phenomenal. It is phenomenal. It could personalize and is personalizing healthcare based on our genetics. It can reduce administrative burden so healthcare professionals can spend more time with patients instead of doing paperwork. We know it can help children learn differently. It can translate knowledge across cultures. It supports creativity and accelerates scientific discovery. There is enormous good waiting to unfold, and I really feel that. I don't know about you, I get butterflies in my belly at the potential of this, of how it can help and support and enable and empower. But equally, every great advancement carries responsibility. AI can also amplify misinformation. And we've seen lots of evidence of this recently, haven't we? It can encourage comparison, replace genuine conversation with convenience, and exploit our attention. It can make it easier to manipulate emotions and reduce opportunities for craftsmanship. And perhaps, if we're not careful, tempt us to outsource parts of our humanity itself. Not because the technology is bad, but because every tool changes the hand that holds it. So perhaps the question isn't, will AI change the world? Of course it will. Every significant innovation has. The printing press changed the world. Electricity changed the world. The internet itself changed the world. And this will too. The more important question is, who will we choose to become alongside it? Will we become more distracted or more discerning, more isolated or more connected, more efficient or more compassionate? Because no technology, however intelligent, can decide that for us. Only we can. And so I've been reflecting on this question a great deal over my holidays. And that's what happens when you have family that entertain your children and you get time to actually monotask and slow down and simplify. But especially this last year, as I've had a lot of clients coming forward and a lot of conversations with people very concerned about AI and the future and, you know, the pace we're working and moving at. And it's made me kind of really have to reflect and think about what it actually is that makes us human. And years ago, we might have answered with intelligence, mightn't we? It's our intelligence that have made us human and enabled us to evolve. But machines are becoming increasingly intelligent. In fact, I remember reading an article in the Times not so long ago where a brain surgeon said that they'd done some random trials with AI and looked at caseloads and case studies and specifics, and actually the accuracy amongst leading brain surgeons was in its 70%, which is, you know, phenomenal. But with AI, it was 94%. And, you know, just watching and seeing how this is evolving is amazing. We might have also said our memory, mightn't we? But actually, machines remember almost everything. And actually, that is not my skill. It's never been my skill, but particularly through perimenopause, the memory thing is not my skill. We might also have said things like our ability to calculate, but actually, I think machines surpassed us long ago. I only had to look at my son's scientific calculator to realize that for myself. So perhaps it isn't intelligence that defines humanity after all. Perhaps it's something deeper. And I wonder whether being human is less about what we know and more about how we love, our capacity to love, to grieve, to forgive, to create, to imagine, and to hope, to comfort another person when there are no words left to say, to hold space, to sit beside someone in silence, and somehow let them know they're not alone. I don't believe weakness lives in vulnerability. I think our greatest strength lives there. Because to love someone, truly love them, requires immense courage. And to allow yourself to be loved requires even more. There's a beautiful quote by the late spiritual teacher Ram Dass. He said, "We're all just walking each other home." I'm going to say that again. We're all just walking each other home. I loved that sentence ever since I first heard it, because it strips away so much of what we spend our lives worrying about: status and success, comparison, possessions, recognition. Perhaps when all is said and done, our purpose is much simpler. Perhaps we are simply here to help one another along the journey, to make somebody else's path a little lighter and a little less lonely. Marcus Aurelius, the great Stoic philosopher and Roman emperor, wrote something that has always stayed with me. "Soon you will have forgotten everything. And soon everyone will have forgotten you." Now, I do confess that at first that sounds rather bleak, doesn't it? But actually, I don't think it is. I think it's incredibly liberating. Because if our lives are fleeting, then surely the question isn't how much can I accumulate? It's how deeply did I live? How generously did I love? How often did I laugh? How present was I with the people who mattered most to me? Did I notice the sunrise or the birdsong? Did I make time for wonder and awe? Did I tell people I loved them while I still had the chance? Because one day, none of us know when, our story will become somebody else's memory. And perhaps remembering that helps us live a little more fully and intentionally today. When we come back after the break, I'd like to explore why I believe we've accidentally complicated well-being. Why I think the answers we're searching for are often much simpler than we realise. And how one small community festival in Oxfordshire is trying to remind us that well-being doesn't begin with perfection. It begins with belonging. You're listening to Ancient Wisdom, Modern Science with me, Michelle Hammond, and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to Ancient Wisdom, Modern Science with me, Michelle Hammond. Before the break, we explored what it means to be human in a world that's changing faster than perhaps any generation before us has experienced. We spoke about technology, about progress, about yin and yang, and about the importance of carrying ancient wisdom with us as we step into an increasingly modern future. And it leaves me wondering, when did well-being become so complicated? Because I don't think we deliberately set out to complicate it. I think it happened slowly, didn't it? Almost without us noticing. One new idea, a new trend, one more thing to optimize, until eventually, many of us reached a point where looking after ourselves began to feel like another job on an already overwhelming to-do list. And that's absolutely what I'm hearing in clinic and through my training rooms right now. And perhaps you've experienced that yourself. You've promised yourself you'll exercise more, sleep better, drink more water, eat better, meditate, journal, practice gratitude, spend less time on your phone, learn something new, call your parents, volunteer, stretch, read before bed, cook from scratch, get outside, take supplements. And somewhere amongst trying to improve every part of your life, you simply became exhausted. And sometimes I wonder whether we've turned well-being into another performance, something else to do, to achieve, to perfect, something we compare. But I don't believe well-being was ever meant to feel like another exam. One of the privileges of the work I do is sitting with people from every walk of life. Teenagers navigating anxiety, overwhelm, social isolation. Parents carrying invisible burdens. Business owners under immense pressure. And people living with chronic diseases like cancer. Elite athletes, teachers, retirees, executives, some people who appear to have everything, others who are rebuilding after losing almost everything. And despite how different their stories are, the conversations often return to remarkably similar themes. I don't make enough time for myself, or I've become disconnected from the people I love. I feel broken. I've forgotten what brings me joy. I feel constantly busy but strangely unfulfilled. I don't know when I stopped doing the things that made me feel like me. Isn't that fascinating, though? Not one person has ever sat opposite me and said, "Michelle, the problem is, I haven't downloaded enough apps," or "I haven't got enough well-being gadgets." More often than not, they're quietly longing for something much older. Time, presence, nature, meaning, friendship, purpose, laughter and joy, rest, belonging. Things that no algorithm can manufacture, but things that humanity has always needed. And as I've been designing the Wallingford Wellbeing Festival, one of the first questions I had to ask myself was, if wellbeing isn't just about health and optimization, what is it? Because health and well-being are not quite the same thing. You can be physically healthy and deeply lonely. You can be financially successful, can't you? Yet emotionally exhausted. Spiritually curious, but disconnected from your community. Creative, but burnt out. Many of you will know that one. Well-being is beautifully interconnected. It's like the spokes of a wheel. You strengthen one, and often another begins to strengthen too. But ignore one for long enough, and eventually the whole wheel starts to wobble. So I created the festival around 8 key pillars. Not because they're the only 8 that matter, but because together they remind us that well-being isn't one thing. It's a relationship with ourselves, with others, and with the world around us. In fact, that was one of the things I loved when I went to the Global Retreat Centre and did a retreat with them recently over in Newnham Courtney in Oxfordshire. Their whole philosophy is about helping people reconnect to themselves, to others, and to nature. So let's begin with perhaps the most obvious, physical well-being. It's the one that most people think about when you ask them what well-being means to them. They'll talk to you about their physical health or how much exercise they do or the sports they play. Think about movement, but also sleep and nutrition and recovery and healthcare. Our bodies are extraordinary. In fact, those of you that know me will know it is my absolute love affair, the human body and the wonder of us, the miracle of life and every part of it. And I never get bored with learning and deepening that learning. Every second without asking permission, your heart beats, your lungs breathe, your immune system patrols and your liver detoxifies. Your brain processes millions of pieces of information. And around 37 trillion cells, still not quite sure who counted them, quietly working together in astonishing harmony. Not because you're telling them what to do, but because your body has spent millions of years learning how to keep you alive and thriving. And perhaps we spend so much time criticizing our bodies or critiquing it that we forget to thank them. The second pillar is one I think we're becoming much better at talking about, but there's still a big taboo, particularly in the Western Hemisphere: mental and emotional well-being. Not pretending everything is fine, not forcing positivity and not suppressing difficult emotions or thinking some emotions are the better ones to be in. It's about learning to understand ourselves. In traditional Chinese medicine, there's a beautiful understanding that emotions are not enemies. They are simply messengers. Fear, anger, grief, joy, worry, each has a purpose. Each has a wisdom. And the goal isn't to eliminate emotions. It's just to listen before it has to shout. Then perhaps one of my favourite pillars is connection. Because if there's one thing the research continues to tell us, it's this. The quality of our relationships is one of the strongest predictors of both happiness and longevity. The remarkable Harvard study of adult development has followed people for more than 80 years across careers, marriage, success, failure, illness, retirement. And after decades of research, one conclusion consistently rises to the surface, and it's not wealth or fame or status. It's good relationships keeping us healthier and happier for longer. And actually, it's the fundamentals of any sort of Blue Zone research too. So just let that sink in for a minute. Perhaps the greatest investment we ever make isn't in property or pensions or portfolios. It's in people. And one of my favourite words has become belonging. Because I think there's an important difference between being included and truly belonging, or having a sense of belonging. And you can be surrounded by hundreds of people and still feel invisible, can't you? Or you can sit with one person who sees you completely and suddenly feel so safe. Because belonging isn't about fitting in, It's about never feeling you have to pretend. It's about being able to exhale or arrive exactly as you are without needing to perform or impress, without needing to earn your place. And perhaps that's what well-being should feel like too. Not another standard to reach, but somewhere we're welcomed exactly as we are. And perhaps that's why this festival matters to me. Not because it's another event. There are plenty of events and plenty of festivals sprouting up everywhere. And not because it's about wellness trends or profiteering. It isn't. It's because I wanted to create something that removed the barriers. Because having spent decades working in the luxury market, I recognize that no one should ever feel they need to be fit enough to join in or to attend, flexible enough, spiritual enough, knowledgeable enough, wealthy enough. Curiosity should be enough. Whether someone comes for a 5-minute breathing session, tries acupuncture for the first time, or listens to a fascinating talk, joins a laughter workshop, discovers a local charity, wanders through the woodland, or shares a cup of tea with someone they've never met, or maybe just simply sits quietly beneath a tree for 10 minutes. That's all well-being. Not because somebody prescribed it, because they experienced it. And perhaps that's something we have forgotten. The most powerful well-being interventions aren't always the most complicated. In fact, they are often the simplest. Sometimes they are wonderfully ordinary. And so we think they're not enough. A conversation, a walk, a shared meal, a kind word or glance, an unexpected smile, a moment of stillness, or a community that reminds you you were never meant to do life alone. And again, those of you that listen to me often will know that it takes a village mentality is exactly the camp I play in. After the next break, I'd like to explore the remaining pillars of well-being: purpose, creativity, nature, financial well-being, and spirituality. But also something even more important: how each of us can begin to build our own personal well-being ecosystem. Not by trying to change everything tomorrow, but by making one beautifully human choice today. You're listening to Ancient Wisdom, Modern Science with me, Michelle Hammond. And we'll be right back in just a few moments.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Ancient Wisdom, Modern Science with me, Michelle Hammond. Today, we've been exploring a deceptively simple question. What does it mean to be human? We've reflected on ancient wisdom and modern science, on the extraordinary opportunities and responsibilities that technologies like artificial intelligence present, on the importance of community, belonging, and connection. And we've begun exploring the 8 pillars of well-being that sit at the heart of the Wallingford Wellbeing Festival. But I'd like to spend these final minutes together thinking less about well-being as an idea and more about well-being as a way of living. Because ultimately, knowledge changes very little. Awareness is wonderful. Insight is invaluable. But transformation begins when knowledge becomes practice. In my teaching, many of you will have heard me say, knowledge is not the power. It is the application of it. So one of the biggest shifts in my own thinking over the years was that we often treat different parts of our lives as though they exist in isolation, don't we? We talk about our work, our health, our relationships, finances, purpose, spirituality. almost as though they each occupy different rooms in the same house. But they don't. They're all connected. I always like to think of it like a beautiful big old oak tree. You don't just nourish one branch. You have to nourish the roots. And then every branch benefits. And I believe our lives work in much the same way. When we're exhausted, we're often less patient with those we love. When we're lonely, our physical health often suffers. And when we're constantly worried about money, our sleep changes. When we lose our sense of purpose or our faith, our motivation quietly fades. And when we stop spending time in nature, many of us notice our nervous system feels permanently switched on. In fact, many people reported such through COVID. Because nothing exists in isolation. We are ecosystems, not machines. And ecosystems thrive through diversity, not perfection. So let's complete our journey around those eight pillars, not as a checklist, but as gentle invitations. Purpose and work. One of the questions I ask clients surprisingly often is, what makes you come alive? What brings you joy? Not what you do or what you earn, but what lights something inside of you? Because purpose doesn't have to mean changing the world. For one person, it might be raising their children. For another, it may be growing vegetables. For some, it may be teaching or creating or volunteering, building businesses that serve others, caring for a neighbour or mentoring someone younger. Purpose isn't measured by applause, it's measured by meaning. And as the psychiatrist and Holocaust survivor Viktor Frankl wrote, those who have a why to live can bear almost any how. Purpose gives us resilience because it gives suffering context. Then we have financial well-being. Now, this might surprise you, but financial well-being sits alongside every other pillar. Not because money buys happiness. We know from decades of research that beyond meeting our basic needs, more money doesn't automatically create greater happiness or well-being. But financial security does influence our stress. It influences our relationships, it influences our opportunities and our sense of safety. And perhaps one of the kindest things we can do for ourselves and our families is remove some of the anxiety that comes from avoiding conversations about money. Because financial well-being isn't about becoming wealthy. It's about creating enough stability that money becomes a tool rather than a constant source of fear. So a side note on this one, if you are struggling financially, please seek help. There can be a lot of shame and guilt and blame around poverty and around lack. And it's really important that you recognize that your bank balance is not a reflection of who you are, but more of a reflection of just where you are. And there are many, many amazing charities and support out there that are willing to help. And if you don't know where to turn, please do reach out and ping me an email, and I'd be more than happy to direct you. Then we have nature and the environment. And I sometimes think nature is the greatest therapist we've ever overlooked. It never asks us to be different. Trees don't seem to compare themselves to one another. Rivers don't apologize for changing course. The seasons don't rush. They simply unfold. And research continues to show that spending time amongst trees can lower cortisol, improve mood, reduce blood pressure, and restore attention. The Japanese even have a name for it, Shinrin-yoku, forest bathing. Not hiking, not exercising, simply being, bathing in the forest. Allowing nature to remind us that we're part of something much bigger than ourselves. And I often wonder, when was the last time you stood beneath a tree and simply looked up? Not while checking your phone and not while rushing somewhere else, but just looked and was present. Then we have creativity. one of the most misunderstood pillars of well-being, I think. Because many people immediately say to me, but I'm not creative. And I always smile because I don't think creativity was ever about becoming an artist or a musician or a writer. Creativity is simply the act of bringing something into the world that wasn't there before. It may be a beautiful meal or a thoughtful conversation. Could be a knitted blanket or a photograph, a poem, maybe your garden or your business or a solution. Even raising children is one of the most extraordinary creative acts imaginable. And actually, we can learn from children because we don't stop playing because we grow old. We grow old because we stop playing. And in my corporate coaching and wellness workplace strategy work, I'm forever looking for ways to engage and enable adults to be more playful, more spontaneous, more joyful in their work. It creates much better performance, heightened levels of productivity, and greater profitability. So it's a win-win-win. You see, children instinctively understand this, don't they? You give a child a cardboard box and they will build a castle or a spaceship or a pirate ship or, my daughter, a race car. And somewhere along the journey into adulthood, many of us become frightened of looking silly. And we get told to grow up, don't we, and to act our age. But perhaps joy has always lived on the other side of self-consciousness. And finally, spiritual well-being. Now, spirituality means different things to different people. And for you, you will have things come up into your mind right now that help you understand what spirituality means to you. For some, it is deeply rooted in religion or faith. And for others, it's found in meditation, in nature or music. For some, silence, prayer, wonder or service. Or simply those moments when life suddenly feels bigger than ourselves. Spirituality isn't necessarily about having answers. It's more like staying open to the questions, remaining curious, humble, and awake to the extraordinary privilege of simply being alive. There's a Japanese art form called kintsugi. When a treasured ceramic bowl breaks, it isn't hidden away or thrown out. Instead, the cracks are carefully repaired using lacquer mixed with gold. The fractures aren't disguised. They're illuminated. The bowl becomes more beautiful because it has been broken. And I often thought that's a wonderful metaphor for being human, because every person you meet carries invisible cracks, grief, loss, illness, disappointment, failure, regret, heartbreak. We spend so much energy trying to hide those cracks. Yet perhaps that's where our compassion comes from. Our wisdom, our empathy, our ability to sit with another person's pain because we've known our own. And perhaps healing isn't becoming who we were before life happened. Perhaps healing is becoming someone gentler because life happened. So when people ask me why I'm creating the Wallyford Wellbeing Festival, I sometimes struggle to answer in one sentence because honestly, it isn't really about a festival. The festival is simply the gathering place. The real vision is much bigger. I wanted to create a community where asking for help wasn't a weakness, where actually you could safely explore what you didn't know, where every generation had something to teach the next, and where ancient wisdom sat comfortably beside modern science, where healthcare professionals and charities, teachers, artists, practitioners, volunteers, businesses and neighbours all recognise they each hold a piece of the well-being puzzle, and where well-being wasn't something delivered to people, but something created with them. And imagine if every town had that. When I was younger, I used to think of global domination. I wanted to run businesses that had impact internationally. And as I got older, I've realised that I want to make a difference where I am. That doesn't mean I still don't have dreams of influencing and inspiring people on a broader level. But if all of us focused on making the area we live in a better place, more connected, more focused, a deeper sense of belonging. If every community had spaces where people could simply come together, no labels, no expectations, just curiosity, conversation, and connection, wouldn't that be awesome? Because I don't believe loneliness is solved by another app or anything outside of ourselves. It's solved one conversation at a time, one smile, one invitation, one act of courage. So I'd like to finish today's program by asking something of you. Not because I have the answers, far from it, but because I genuinely believe the greatest wisdom doesn't live inside any expert. It lives within our communities. And I'd love you to help us shape this festival, even though you may not be near. If you would spend some time just visiting the link I'm going to share alongside today's program and tell me what well-being means to you. What does being human mean to you? When do you feel most alive? What brings you most joy? How do you care for yourself when life becomes overwhelming? Which of the eight pillars felt strongest in your life right now as you heard them? And which one quietly might need a little more love or attention? And finally, if you could create one experience that helped another human feel seen, safe, or inspired, or could attend the festival yourself and learn something or feel something or find something there that you think might help you, what might it be? There aren't any right answers that I'm looking for, only honest ones. And perhaps that's exactly where meaningful conversations always begin. I'd like to leave you with one final thought. The future will undoubtedly bring extraordinary advances. Medicine will become more personalized. Thank the Lord. Artificial intelligence will become more capable. Science will continue revealing the astonishing complexity of the human body and mind, and I welcome that. I celebrate that. But as we step into that future, I hope we carry something really precious with us. And that's the understanding that our greatest innovation has never been technology. It's humanity itself. Our capacity to care, to comfort, to forgive, to imagine, to laugh and create and reach out and to say, "Are you okay?" And to stay long enough to hear the answer. Because perhaps well-being isn't another destination to reach. It's simply the way we choose to walk each other through life, one ordinary day at a time. As Ram Dass so beautifully reminded us, that is all we're here to do, just walk each other home. So wherever life finds you this week, be gentle with yourself, be curious, notice the people around you, put your phone down a little more often, look somebody in the eye, take the scenic route, watch a sunset, tell someone you love them, say thank you, say sorry if you need to, ask for help if you need it, offer help if you can. Because this life is astonishingly brief, and perhaps the measure of a life well lived isn't found in what we collected, but in how deeply we connected. Thank you for spending this time with me. I'm Michelle Hammond, and this has been Ancient Wisdom, Modern Science. And until next time, look after yourself, look after each other, and never underestimate the extraordinary power of simply being beautifully, imperfectly human.